I'm sorry, you were saying in the...
Well, way back there, when it first started going to over to Hanover, see, the town paid so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people, the family had to pay so much.
That must have been quite a while.
Oh, it was quite a while ago, yeah. And then I think the law comes through that the town should furnish education for children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they voted that the town would pay the full tuition over Hanover, which I think at that time was roughly around $150, maybe.
Per kid.
If I'm not right, per child.
Yeah.
Well, that was why we were talking back and forth about joining up with Dresden. John Fraser made the remark. He said, I'll bet, he says, the way things are going, that tuition inside of 3-4 years will be $600. And he hit it right on the nose. That year, the tuition kept rising. That was before anybody ever knew about this inflation business, you know. And he said, the question of, can you stand it? Because the state, all of the town, let's see, what was it? The state paid $275, I think, for a period of time, which was what their average cost per pupil.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the town would have paid if we had joined up with White River. We would have paid that cost. And I think, but of course, Harold was a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we had to pay, whatever the Hanover cost per pupil was, that mm-hmm. per child. But it's amazing how I don't know what it is over there now. It must be $1,300-$1,400 per child.
Yeah, I don't know the exact either, but I know it's up there.
Yeah.
And
of course, I think the way it stands now is that Norwich pays 1/3 of their cost, because they had about 1/3 of the children, I think, at that time. Now, I don't know how many children they have, but at one time, I think somebody said they had about 600 or 700 over there, and we had about 200, mm-hmm. which was about 1/3, so they paid 1/3 of the cost mm-hmm. of the operating the senior or the part of the school. I don't think that interferes with the elementary part, because we don't have anything to do with that over there, do we, on this?
We have 6th, 7th.
Oh, that's right, the 6th grade now goes over there.
No, 7th. It's 6th or 7th grade, anyway. It starts long before 9th grade.
Yeah.
It was 9th grade when I was there, but of course I wasn't there during the Dresden part either. That came after after I graduated. The town was still paying tuition
mm-hmm.
in those days, so.
So it's quite a, I think most of them were satisfied. Of course, there was that time, you know, when it came up that we thought we should build a schoolhouse of our own down here on the, where the tennis courts are in the mink farm area, that the town owned the land. I guess, I don't know, but the school district owned the land, bought that land with that in mind, that they might want to expand from here up to there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the story came up that they ought to have a high school there. Why? And leave Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose there was a lot of consideration there and thought put into it. Because a lot of people thought it would be nice, but when you look at the fundamental end of it, why, you couldn't give the children an education over here that they were getting over in Hanover. What I mean by that is the variety.
Mm-hmm.
You see, up here with 200 children, you've got a big building, and you'd have to have the demand for the education the same as they were getting in Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have that many different classes, and it would end up that you probably only had 10 in one class, and you couldn't afford to have a teacher for that just that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of thought put into it that way, and I guess they decided that it was going to be just too expensive to try to compete with Hanover.
Right, right. And expenses certainly in education are something to be concerned about.
And the way things have gone now, the cost of education and everything, why it's quite a lot not to think of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably they made the right decision to, of course it seems, we were the first town in the state, you know, or in the, I don't know, but around the, in the United States to combine with a, with an out of state.
Right.
So that started things going, I guess. Now, I think all the way up and down the Connecticut River, I believe it's.
Right. I know of one interstate school system on the other side with New York, Vermont and New York. So
yeah.
It's happening, right.
Well, it was quite a change. I mean, it took quite a little time to get it through legislature and through the Congress, I guess. They had to go through the government, you know,
mm-hmm.
to in order mm-hmm. to do it, but it come through, all right.
Let's go back to the 1930s a little bit. What was Norwich like then? What do you remember in terms of the, do you remember knowing everybody? Was it a, what kind of a small town was it?
Well, I really couldn't remember what the population, but it surely wasn't anywhere near as large as it is now. But it used to be when, in the 30s, I know at mud season, it was bad.
It was. Where was it bad? Everywhere?
Oh, everywhere. You come across what used to be the flat down here, which would be from before the thruway was put in.
Right.
It would be the old, from McKenna Road, right across that flat was mm-hmm. was almost impassable mud season. And right up Main Street, I think it was bad too, right in front of the, all the way up to the store, right up through.
Uh-huh.
If you went out at night, sometimes you'd see cars parked beside the road, you know, they get stuck in the mud and couldn't get out.
Uh-huh.
Have to wait until daylight probably to have some horses come and probably pull them out.
Uh-huh.
And if you come home, being a youngster, you know, coming home after a date,
uh-huh.
if it was cold enough, you could ride the ridges and probably make it if you didn't slip off of them.
Right.
Yeah. But, no, we used to, with our delivery truck, you know, and we'd go out in the mud season. We used to deliver way up to, almost to the Brigham Orchard.
Uh-huh.
Sprague Slack, used to live there then, and that was the last stop up, and it was terrible. We had that big high-wheel Dodge that we go up through, you know, we have, and up there by the old Sargent Place, darn Sargent Place, which is, Don Kreider lives there now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spot of road there where I think people got stuck and took the rocks out of the sidewalls, out of the roadside, and put into those ruts, you know,
mm-hmm.
see, to raise them up so they get a little more start. Well, that was to the point where those rocks are evidently keep working up, so as you go along, you know, you bump, you strike a rock and move, you know, see, and you'd have chains. I remember coming down from Sprague Slacks, we used to pick up eggs up there.
And which house is that now?
That's Warner. Is it, what's his name lives there?
Wagner.
Huh? Wagner.
Yep, right.
Yeah, old Globe Wagner. I remember coming down through there one time, Sprague gave me a case of eggs. I was empty, you know, too, and I, on the way home, and I, coming down through, you know, and I guess we had chains on, and you'd go as far as you could, you know, so you'd spin and stick, and then all of a sudden, the chains would get hold of one of those rocks, and it would, you'd bounce ahead, you know,
mm-hmm.
so, well, that was the way it was, slowly coming down. I think probably when we get down to the store, out of 30 dozen in the case of eggs, we might have had probably 20. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure that I don't think they'd ever hatch because I'm afraid the fertility was all gone.
That's amazing. Well, there must have been other inconveniences besides mud season in the 30s. Or there must have been
Well, of course, there was a lot of horse and carriage buggies then that days. People used to come. People never visited the store as often as they did then, because we did have the delivery service, which is it was convenience to the people, and you know, we'd go around and sit in the kitchen at different routes and visit with the ladies, you know, and of course, and try to sell them all your specials and everything. It's just like high pressure salesmanship, you know.
Oh, so you were peddling more than actually delivering. I mean, I wouldn't call in and say, I want this and this and this. You'd just show up and in your room, and you'd have all different kinds of things.
No, we just took out what they call a sample basket of what we thought people might be interested in, different things. And go into the house with your book, and you know, might have cakes that they might want for dinner or something, or different things that were on special. You could show them what it was like. It was almost like a... like the Raleigh man, you know, when they go around, and the Watkins fellow used to come to the house, but of course they had their full supply right with them.
But then you'd go back to the store, you'd take an order, you mean?
We'd take an order, probably, well, whatever people wanted, spices, or, well, I'd like some of this, or some of that, and so forth, and then we come back in, probably, and then fill those orders. The three of us would work on it, and start probably about 4 o'clock, delivering again, delivering the same route. So as you had it all in different boxes, you know, and the order was all calibrated and added up and everything, and you took it in and put the stuff on the lady's table there, and either if she had a charge account, that was fine. If not, why, she'd pay for it.
Yep.
And that was it. You come back home. Of course, in the meantime, my telephone service, they'd call up and add to it if they wanted to. And but after we took over, that was quite an expense, you know. For after,
and you bore that whole expense. I mean, that was
that
the
is
stores.
The stores did, yeah. Of course, I suppose, as anybody says, well, in them days they never added on this as an extra expense. That was an expense of delivery.
Yeah.
Expense of the store. A lot of them say, well, what difference does it make? It probably stuff cheaper if you didn't deliver. But I don't think that was true. I think it was absorbed as a business expense. Convenience to the public, we'll call it, because you get more business probably that way because people didn't have to come out of the house, especially in the wintertime.
Goodness, you delivered all. Then you did deliver all year round.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah. Because when we took over, why, we didn't feel as though we could afford that expense of delivery, because it took one man that took all the time that done nothing but delivering and or taking orders. So we had to cancel that out, and but we did offer them service that we, if they called in their order, or we call them in the morning, each one around, and if they wanted to, we'd put up an order and deliver it, you know, for a period of time. No, I'll take that back. Afterward, we had to stop delivering and taking orders. I think the last part of being with Mr. Merrill was that we'd done that.
Rather than go out,
yeah, we decided that it would be probably a little bit better if we could just call the folks on the phone, call our customers and take their order. And they were very cooperative. They would have their order ready and they'd spiel it right down through and we'd copy it down and then put it up. Well, you can see that that would make it quite a little difference.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'd go out and deliver it. But then when Dan and I took over, why, it was an expense that we couldn't afford, so we did. But they were still cooperative. Gee, they, people would come.
What other stores were there in Norwich at that time?
Well, I always say that we outlived quite a lot of competition. I think when I first went to work there, because Merle Currier had a store in Lewiston.
You're saying Merle. Merle Currier.
Well, I call him Merle because that's the name of it. Currier's store is in Lewiston, right?
Right, right.
Where the post office was.
Right.
He ran the post office there, too. He started running a delivery cart to up through, you know, if anybody wanted to. He wasn't quite as large, naturally not as large a store as Merle's was. Then there was an A&P store that came in across the, where the dentist office is now. The dentist office. There was an AP come in there for a while. Wilfred Croteau run it for them. I don't know, as you know, Wilfred Croteau, was related to Ruby Fitzgerald up here.
What is his relationship to Buddy? Was that his father or his...
Wilfred was, Buddy's father.
Oh.
Yeah. And
he ran the A&P there.
He ran the A&P when it was there, but they didn't stay there very long. Evidently couldn't make it go. Then there was because Rob Olds, no, Gill's store, Gill had a drugstore, opened up a drugstore in where the Gardner Agency is now. That was Gill's store in there, that side of the
building. I never realized that he was there.
But it wasn't Rob Olds that built, it was Gill.
I said Gill.
Didn't you? I thought you said Rob Olds opened it up.
Rob Olds, I started to, but Rob Olds worked for Gill over in the corner. The
yeah, he did.
Rob went from the, well, that was about Gill, I think, had a store over there, opened up, of course it was, I don't know who was in there first. Isn't it funny, there was a store there that Gill took over anyway, and Gill opened up, moved from the from what they call the drugstore, over to there, and opened up and sold groceries in competition to Merrill's.
I'm a little bit confused. Gill opened up, he bought the store where the Gardner Agency is now.
Yeah.
And he had a drugstore there.
He had a drugstore there, sold ice cream.
But then he bought the
And he went up
the
and bought
store.
That corner store.
And moved over there.
Moved over there,
with
the drugstore, and then he carried a partial line of groceries, you know, see. And Rob went over to work for him.
When he closed
and
down
he
his
closed up, yeah, his drugstore store.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, I think Charlie McKenna had what they called the lamppost in there where Gill was.
Was it a little restaurant like?
Yeah.
Sandwich
I think so.
Shop or something like that?
I think he'd come after Gill. Didn't he? I don't know, it's a long ago, but anyway,
right.
In a period of years, there was those two stores mm-hmm. that were in there. And
Gill had it first. Is that on?
It's okay.
Gill had it first because and then Charlie McKenna was afterwards.
Gill must have had it because I worked for Gill a few times. You know, see, just, I went in there.
That's before you and I were married.
Yeah. That's right too. Gee, the time flies. yeah, because Gill and I were kind of acquainted. I don't know where we met, but he was kind of lonesome. He was all alone. We met. And we went different places. I think he wanted a little friendship, you know. Mm-hmm. See, because he'd come up to the farm and stayed with us a couple of nights up the farm, you know, just to be mm-hmm. with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. And I went down here. He and his father operated the store down there, and the drugstore. Because I remember going in there, cutting up ice cream, you know, gallons of ice cream, cut them up in chunks,
uh-huh.
and put a popsicle stick in them, and dip them in chocolate, and then put them in the freezer.
Oh, wow.
Made our own popsicles.
Uh-huh. Sure. Isn't that something?
That was before I went to work for Merrill. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right, too.
Huh. And then there was the IGA.
That's right. The IGA was over there.
That was over where the hairdresser
yeah.
was now.
Oh yeah, well that was Donnie Ballam and Ralph Hollis opened up a store over there, and I guess
they had one time in the front of Dorrance Sargent's house. Didn't last long.
Yes, there was a.
Was that the same too? You mean
the fellow that left the A&P that was running? Oh, Wilford, yeah, Crowder won the A&P, and then this other fellow they brought in run the A&P, a fellow from Lebanon, and he got through from there, and then he got mad and he opened up a. Where the old Don Sargent
mm-hmm.
house was, he opened up the front end of that, where the steps used to be.
Mm-hmm.
They used to go up, and he had a little small grocery department there, you know, see, and of course he had his friends, and but that didn't last very long. He went out of there.
Wilford Crono had a place.
Wilford?
That government building that sat here was built for Wilford Crono to have a grocery store in. He ran it for maybe a year.
Yeah, maybe, I guess so.
At the post office when he...
Yeah. Would you remember the post office as being here first before they went to Tracy Hall?
Oh, yes.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it left the store and came here for...
That's right.
And was here for maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And then went to Tracy.
Then they went
to Tracy Hall. And that's why they call that shack. It was here, the government building.
Right. And then it went to the parish house.
When did they have it over the parsonage, or the parish house across the road?
Well, that was after they left Tracy Hall.
Right.
After
they left
Tracy, well.
And then I don't know where it was just during that, in between the move and the, did it go back to Tracy Hall just in between that move?
I think they were in Tracy Hall while they were building the post office. I think they went to the parish house from here to the parish house.
Yes, then to Tracy Hall.
And Tracy Hall, where the police station is, while they were building the post office. Building the new post office. See, they moved that building over there and then they, around the corner. Yeah, so that's, now we get that solved.
There used to be a lot of activity centered around the Grange Hall.
Wow, that's right.
A lot of social activity.
Oh, yeah.
Were you involved in, I shouldn't say
every
that.
Every Friday night, we used to have a card party and dance.
You did?
That's where we met.
Imagine that?
Card party and dance.
Well, yeah.
What?
I'd go over and kick her in the shins and ask her if she wanted to dance.
You weren't quite that.
No, but,
That's Zeke Hazen that did that.
The Grange.
It was who?
Zeke Hazen.
What Hazen was that?
Well,
Roy Hazen's son, and they lived up where Charlie Hazard.
Yeah.
I don't know who lives in the house now.
I think. Yeah, he was a. Yeah, they used to have some real activity there.
Tell me about the card parties and the dances. How were those organized?
The Grange organized them. You know, that is, they had a committee, I suppose, on the Grange, same as most of our organizations do.
And play whist until 10 o'clock, and then they dance from then till 1, every Friday night.
And what kind of dances was?
Round and square.
Round and square. Was it Western Square?
They didn't hear of the Western Squares then. It was just the plane quadrille, you know, what is it?
More like the old the
Boston
dance.
Fancy, you know, just
Did you have live music?
Oh yeah, sure.
Who?
Cosenhams.
Cosenhams. They had an orchestra and
the Grange people.
I was down there sometimes playing a harmonica.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bob Whitney would tap dance there for them, and
he used to drum.
He was a drummer.
Uh-huh.
Lonnie Dinsmore was a violinist. And the Cossinghams,
one of the family played
to
them.
Colleen used to play the piano. Remember Colleen Cossingham? And George, I think George played a.
Didn't he drum?
I'm not sure. One of them played a saxophone. And I guess there was a stranger out of the family that came in and played a.
Bill was this. Wasn't Bill Cossingham the saxophonist or the wind instrument?
Yeah, player? I believe so. Right you are. Yeah.
He's the one that lived down on Carpenter Street.
Right.
Right.
That's Colleen's husband.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, that was the, they used to call it the Cossingham Orchestra.
And round dancing would be waltzing and.
Waltz, foxtrot, one step, or the gallo, as they used to call it. Donnie Dinsmore used to, and Doris Sargent used to like the gallo. You didn't remember Doris, that was the oldest daughter of Doris, not Tories. Younger, Tori's
sister.
The name sounds very familiar.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
was she plumpish and maybe a short woman?
Yeah.
Not terribly short, but maybe.
No, taller than I am.
Oh.
You're quite heavy.
Then I guess I do kind of remember her. Just vaguely.
Yeah.
But what is this, the gallo?
Yeah, that's where they call it a gallo. It's really a big, fast one-step where they almost hop around, you know. And Lonnie, he was pretty spry. God, he'd kick his leg up in the air.
Like the polka.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And did you do polkas then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they know the polka.
Huh. That's
but there was, I don't know what the names of the dances were, but the foxtrot and one step, as they call it. That's just a fast. And the gallo and the. But a lot of them were. Some of the folks wouldn't get out for the gallo because there wasn't room enough for them, you know.
There were a lot of.
Did you do this upstairs or did you do it downstairs and upstairs? The cards one place and the dance
No, the card party used to be upstairs.
Yeah, then
they'd come downstairs to.
They had a little hole in the ceiling and somebody would get up there and they'd put the tables up through the hole in the ceiling. Well, first, after the card party, you know, they'd have refreshments. Oh boy, cake, the best cakes and sandwiches and whole meal practically, you know.
Uh-huh.
You paid a quarter, and that was
the whole night's entertainment.
So when you played cards, you just played to win, not to win something.
Oh, there was a prize. They had a little prize, I think, for the you'd win in partners, you know, and you'd move around. The winners would move, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you just like they do it. at cribbage or anything like that, mm-hmm. you know, progressive whist, they mm-hmm. call it. Yeah, that's a... Then after that was over, they'd clear the... I think they went downstairs to eat. And then they'd come upstairs.
No, they probably ran around you. They ate right at the table where you played cards.
Probably.
And then they'd... Wouldn't take them more than 5 minutes to put those tables up through into the attic. And then they'd...
Dance
until 1 o'clock.
How many people would go? I mean, what would be a crowd?
Oh, I bet you'd have... Of course, a lot of people would come to the dance afterwards. You know, so you'd probably have 15 tables for a table. That's 60. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that would play.
The extras would come in for the dance.
Then, of course, a lot of them come in for the dance, yeah.
Huh. That's something. Would they come from all around, or were they pretty much Norwich
people? Oh, mostly Norwich people. Some youngsters from Hanover would come over. And
the older people, you know, the townspeople went and played cards, and some of them stayed for the dance. Some of the card people would go. People that played cards went home and didn't stay for the dance. And then all the high school gang came in.
That's neat. It was
a decent place to go, you know. Uh-huh. Of course, you can always raise mischief if you want to, you know.
Right.
But most everybody came, and they mostly stayed in the hall.
Oh, yeah, they had a lot of fun. It was really a weekend entertainment, annual entertainment for the weekend.
That's neat. What other social things happened at the Grange?
Well, of course, I don't know, really.
I
was a Granger for a while, then I had then I got out of it. And
were you involved in any of the minstrel shows, which were not Grange necessarily? They were Lions, I think, weren't they?
Oh, no. I think the Grange started
the... Fire company had them, didn't they? I think it was the benefit of the firehouse with. Maybe I'm wrong.
The Grange run the minstrel shows.
They were out.
Then the fire company... run the minstrel shows, then the two of them get in together and they run them in a combination.
Huh.
And they run them for quite a little while, and then I don't know why it changed, but they were raising money for the parsonage, Congregational New Parish House out there and back.
Mm-hmm.
And we started up with running the shows for them. They raised the money for their benefit. Now that must have been, the Lions Club have had it for 25 years. I know they must have been, those shows were going on about 35 or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got involved with it, I think, at the, when the fire company were putting them on. And the Grange together, then they split, I think, and then Grange got sick of it, and I think the fire company took it over themselves. And then we went down, it was during the war, I think, that nobody had them for a while, and then we picked it up for the parish house.
Uh-huh.
First year we started it, we used to spend probably 3 or 4 months on it, rehearsing for it. And then after the vacation of it, we call it, while some experienced fellas come in from Claremont and started them up again.
Mm-hmm.
Their idea was that we put the show on 3 weeks from the time we started rehearsing, the show went on. And of course they brought us up all of these fancy top hats and everything like that, and dressed the end men up in those suits. But from then on, we decided not to hire them. We could have our own, do it and do it the same way. And we were doing it. Then we started on that, just the three.
Concentrated, really.
Yeah.
Everybody got
right there and really put it on. It was a whole lot better show because you didn't get tired of it. You know, you're all excited until the show time, and then it was
right. All
over. But that was but we really felt bad when we lost our minstrel show, the blackface.
Yeah. When did that happen?
Well, I can't tell you the year, but it was at the time when there was quite a little controversy about the blackface
mm-hmm.
business over in Hanover, you know, and mm-hmm. and there was threats that they were going to raise the roof if we put on blackface. And I think we did that one year, regardless, but there was state police were down here in civilian clothes, just in case the students from Hanover come over. Mm-hmm. They threatened to come over and, you know, raise a ruckus, but they didn't. And nobody come, but then the next year we decided, probably why wait for trouble and spoil the show, so we decided to go various things sorted, like a circus theme and the Roaring Twenties, and so we done it that.